Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. So we've heard the saying over and over that slow growth matters. Bloom where you're planted, and there's a season for everything. I mean, I know I say that one a lot. But how do we actually take those things and walk them out? How do we assess our hurried hearts and unhurry them? How do we actually live out the season that we're in without wishing that we're already three seasons ahead? I think we start with my guest today, new book. Jennifer Dukes-Lee is on today, and we are talking all about her new book, Growing Slow. These are the seasons and lessons Jennifer has walked out, and she is leading us in the unhurried lifestyle straight from the farm. Y'all, this conversation was so fun. I found myself giggling and then amening the truths that she would speak. I don't know what season you find yourself in right now, but much like Jennifer, I'm looking spring in the face. After a long, hard winter, God and I are now picking rock, and we are cultivating the land. I'm so expectant in the upcoming harvest. Let's take a lesson in growing slow from our new friend, Jennifer Dukes-Lee. So grab your cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited to be sitting down with a new friend, Jennifer Dukes-Lee. She is just this author who is going to encourage us, and I'm excited about today's conversation because it's more than just like, oh, I read a book, it's great. It is going to help us learn some practices of unhurrying in our minds. And it's been something that like this past spring, I've been doing a ton of like taking thoughts captive, Jennifer. I've been like really, really intentionally like finding those trigger things. And I don't mean like triggers as in like the anxiety, but like finding out what is causing me to be more hurried, or when I start feeling behind, what just happened? Where did these feelings come from? So I need this book, and I know that our friends on the other side definitely need this book too. So, hey, how are you?
So good. I am happy to be here. I have just been looking forward to this for a long time since I reached out to you in October, Jeanette.
I know. And we said, I think we immediately started following each other, and we're like, okay, let's just hang on a second because we want this to be closer to the time. And it's like, that was like yesterday, right? Like October was just yesterday.
I know. It was. It goes fast. We're supposed to grow slow, but the calendar goes fast.
It does. Oh my gosh. So fast. First, what's in your cup? Are you drinking anything?
Well, my coffee of choice, you know, I am just a black coffee girl ordinarily. Oh. However, if I'm going to go out to a coffee shop, I am going to get a double shot of espresso with almond milk and half the vanilla because I don't like it too sweet. Yeah. But I actually have a Breville espresso machine here and I love it. So you'd think that I would be making lattes all the time, but I'm just lazy. So on Saturdays, I'll make myself a latte. Otherwise, I just want my coffee black. Yeah. But right now I'm drinking water.
Oh, that's good. That's good. We have the Breville coffee machine too, and it is the espresso machine. Mm-hmm. It's a gift. It's like a
Breville.
Treasure.
Is that how you say it?
I say Breville, but you said Breville. It makes sense. I think
tomato,
you
know, tomato.
Yeah, they're both right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with that. We just love it. And I make an Americano most days and I just add like cream to it and it's just perfection. Every once in a while I get fancy and we'll make like a, like my go-to one, and that is like the oat milk espresso, like the latte, everything. And that's like when I want to be really fancy. But yeah, sometimes really what it comes down to is the steamer is so loud and obnoxious.
It is. It's very obnoxious. I really wish that I could make those designs on the top.
Same. If I could make the designs, I'd make it a lot more.
Oh yeah. I'd be doing that all the time. Coffee art. Yes. I just don't know how to do that. I don't understand it.
I don't think it's the secret.
Yeah. It's like they don't tell. I ask at really fancy coffee shops and it's like, It's their own secret club, and I'm not in. They won't tell me how they do it.
Well, that's not very nice. I always
No, it's
say,
not.
I grew up saying secrets don't make friends. So secrets don't make friends, baristas. Come on. So that's your go-to coffee order. When you're out and about, you get the almond milk and everything. I like that.
You got
That
it.
sounds great. Okay, can you tell us just a little bit about you and what you do and your new book?
Oh, yes. So my name is Jennifer, and I am a wife of a farmer. The wife of a farmer. He has just one wife. Let me just,
Yeah,
a
a
wife,
wife.
the wife of a
The
farmer.
only.
And we have two daughters. And Lydia is a freshman at Iowa State University studying music, and Anna is a sophomore at Western Christian High School here in Iowa. And Scott farms about 700 acres of corn and soybeans. We also have about 1,000 pigs. So
Oh.
that's one part of my life, a huge part of my life. I am also an author of several books, my latest being Growing Slow, which I'm so excited to talk to you guys about today. So excited. And then also, I am an acquisitions editor for a publishing house, Bethany House Publishers, which is a division of Baker Publishing Group. So it's really wonderful to get to help authors make their dreams come true and just to walk with them and support them. So that's a half-time job that I absolutely just, it just gets me so pumped up.
Yeah, I can imagine. And we were talking books and writing beforehand, which is so fun because us both being in that world, it's just exciting to learn about. But I can only imagine how exciting it is for you to look at people who become friends to you because you're invested in them and be like, "We got your book deal. Let's go."
It is. It's so fun. And, I've always had a heart for helping other writers, and I know what it's like to be,
Yeah.
hoping to get published and just working hard and wondering if my dream will ever come true. So I've sort of mentored authors for a really long time. And I've mentored young writers. I was an adjunct professor at Dort College, now Dort University, for a while as well. So I've got all this history of mentoring people, but now I feel like I get to do it in a super meaningful way. Fewer people do I mentor because I can, only walk with a few at a time toward their goal of publication. But it just feels like such a meaningful way to walk alongside authors. I love it.
I love that so much. And so one of the things I love about what you do and then what you wrote is it kind of goes hand in hand, right? Like you're mentoring. So you're not saying like, okay, you're gonna do this, we're gonna go viral, you're gonna go big, we're gonna go home. It's like mentoring means you're walking that slow and steady daily pace with them. Like, and if me, I'm imagining us walking together. If I'm sprinting ahead, you're gonna be like, hey. Come back here. Look at this flower back here. Like, come on. Like,
That's right.
come on. Like, you're going too far ahead. And like I said, the spring has really been me digging into like these feelings where all of a sudden I feel like I'm behind or I feel like I'm missing the boat or any of those things. And God's like, hey, I control your boat. So I'll let you know when it's time to go. And
That's
instead,
right.
I'm trying to jump on other people's boats.
Yeah, it's tough. I think that because of COVID too, I think a lot of us feel like we lost all this time. So I know some women and men in their 20s who are like, I'm not married yet, and I lost a whole year of dating, for
Oh, yeah.
instance, and like people in publishing, or they were trying to release books in the midst of a
Yeah.
pandemic and thinking, my career is ruined. And
Right.
in publishing a lot, both as an author and as an acquisitions editor, I see this urge to grow fast, to go
Yes.
viral. And I'm always like, that's like overnight success is just not a thing. I mean, it
Yeah.
is kind of a thing on like The Voice or American Idol or something, but even then, there is so much work sitting
Yeah.
behind what got them to that point to even be on that stage. And
Yeah.
the same is true in publishing. People will say, Jennifer, well, you got, 50,000 followers on Facebook. Of course you can get published. Well, I started at zero too, and we
Right.
all start at zero. There was a day when I sat down in my seat and started a blog, and I had zero readers except for
Right.
mom. And the same with my Facebook and Instagram. And I think when I get proposals from prospective authors, I'm not looking for somebody who grew things rapidly. I am looking for somebody who put down good roots. And I know some of you
Yeah.
are like, "What did she just say? Roots?"
Yep.
Roots. You say roots, I say roots. You
Yeah.
say Breville, I say Breville.
Breville. We're gonna go back to that, but one of the things, what do you call the things in your kitchen where you put your food away or your plates?
Cupboards.
Cupboards. Okay, I call them cupboards too.
Or they're cabinets too.
Cabinets, my friends, because Jesse and I, my husband and I, are getting ready to paint our cabinets, our cupboards. And I said it, I was at brunch with some friends and I said, yeah, we're gonna paint our cupboards in the next couple weeks. And they were like, it's funny that you call them cupboards. That must be an Alaska thing. And I was like, what do you guys call them? And they're like, they're cabinets. I was like, oh. And I looked at my best friend, who's been my best friend for many, many years now. And I was like, what do you call those things that I'm going to paint next week? She's like, oh, your cabinets? Yeah, you call them cupboards. I'm like, how has nobody corrected me or told me that I say something different? I mean, I guess
What is
like I'm
not
thankful for
wrong? What
sweet
if you're
friends.
right? What if they're wrong?
You know what? I like that thought process.
You know, there's a book, this whole roots
Yeah.
thing. I've been talking about it a lot on Instagram, and it's just kind of cracking people up. So somebody sent me a book called, oh, I hope it's called How to Talk American. And it is, oh, Speaking American.
Speaking
Speaking
American.
American. And it is so good. So I'm in Iowa, and a Dr. Pepper or a Sprite or something like that, what do you call it?
I think I call it a Coke.
Okay, everything is a Coke.
Yeah, I think so. Because my sister and I were just talking about this. I'm so into this conversation. My sister and I were just talking about that. And I would say, can I have a Coke? I would say, I can have a Coke. And I mean, like, can I have a Coca-Cola? But I remember we were talking about this. My mom, she's a Dr. Pepper through and through, asked for a Coke. They brought her a Coke. And she's like, why'd you not bring me a Dr. Pepper? Like, she was like, what? But we must have been like out of the state or something.
Okay, so we call it pop.
Pop, yep.
Now, if I'm feeling a little fancy, I might call it soda, but I don't really call it soda.
Yeah. I don't think soda comes out of my mouth naturally enough.
No. What do you call? Okay, one more thing.
Yeah.
What do you call the shoes you wear to the gym?
Oh, I'm trying to think. Like, I'm just gonna grab my shoes or my gym shoes.
Gym shoes. Are they sneakers or are they tennis shoes?
Okay, so we did just go through this with my teenagers because I giggled because my middle, he's my youngest boy, my middle was starting to play tennis and I said, we need to go get you some tennis shoes. And I laughed because they're actually tennis shoes. So I think we call them tennis shoes.
Yeah, we're tennis shoes too, but there's sneakers. There's a whole area of the US that are sneakers people.
Okay, I
I'm
love this.
telling you got to go get this book. And
I'm,
now everybody's going to go buy Speaking
yeah.
American instead of going to buy Growing Slow. That's the bad
No.
thing.
Well, no. Well, what's going to happen, Jennifer? This is going to happen. It's going to pop up on there like, if you like this, you should like this too. And
That's
that's what
right.
we're gonna, that's what we're going to do. There's
That's
my
what we're
other
going to make
thing.
happen.
The warm hat you wear on your head in the wintertime. What do you call it?
A stocking cap.
Okay. I call it a beanie. I dated a boy from North
Oh.
Carolina who called it a toboggan.
Oh, wow. I thought a
And I'm like,
toboggan was a sled.
that's exactly what a toboggan is. Okay, last one. The thing you ride in the snow that goes fast.
Just a sled. A snowmobile.
Snowmobile. We call it a snow machine.
A snow machine. That is
Yep.
so cute.
Yep. Snow machine. People are like, that's what you make snow with. I'm like, who's making snow? Oh, I love it so much. That makes me so. Okay, this is the last one. I had Angie Smith on the show the other day. And when you put your socks together, what do you call that when you put your socks together?
Oh, there's a name for that?
Well, what do you like if you're gonna fold laundry and the socks are next, do you say anything about it?
No, it's just something that happens.
I say I have to yell this often at my children, which just tells you what kind of mom I am. I yell, go mate your socks.
Oh, that's so precious.
Angie and I had the biggest laugh about that because she was like, mate your socks, that's so graphic.
It is. It's R-rated. Laundry at Jeanette's house, everyone, is R-rated. I don't know. We need to report this
I
show.
know.
Well,
You should.
what does Angie call them? Does
She
she
says,
put
just go match your socks.
match? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I just do the thing and I don't
Yeah.
even have a
You
name
just,
for
yeah,
it.
just do it, which is what you should do. You shouldn't yell, mate your socks at your children.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network and is sponsored in part by
If you're single and looking to date but don't know where to start, it's time to check out Upward. Upward is a new, free app that is super easy to use. You can create a profile in just minutes, and before you know it, you'll be chatting with other Christian singles near you. Ready for a partner that puts faith first? Then it's time to check out Upward. That's UPWARD. Download the app and find your match today. I want to talk more about this growing slow, because this is your lesson on a on unhurrying. And we live in a very hurried culture. I can't tell you how many times I tell my kids to hurry. My daughter is deaf, and so I'm constantly signing hurry at her. Like, hurry, 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 let's go, go, go. We're constantly running late. Part of that is because I'm perpetually late at everything. But the other part of that is we live in a rushed culture. So tell me, like, this is lessons from a farm girl. So I'm sure... Yeah. That there are many unhurrying lessons from the farm. So I'd love just to hear more about your heart on this book.
Yeah. So my growing slow journey actually started in 2005. I found a picture the other day of the moment. I was so glad I found this picture. I put it on my Facebook and Instagram. And it's this moment not long after we moved back to the farm. And Scott and I are standing on the edge of a field. And we've each got a kid on our hip. Kids are little. And the Des Moines Register had come out because I had been working there. They had come out to take a picture for the final essay, my sort of farewell essay to the Des Moines Register. Mm. And a lot of my colleagues, not all of them, but a lot of them were like, you are throwing away your potential. You've got so much ahead of you. I can't believe you're leaving this. You're just throwing it all away. When in my heart of hearts, and Scott too, we knew that we needed to pick a different way and pick a different pace. But standing on the edge of that field, looking at one of my former colleagues as he's shooting that picture of us, I remember in my mind thinking, what if they're right? Hmm. What if I really am throwing it all away? What if I am going to fall behind? And all of these things that I did, you know, I went to college and I was getting awards and I was right on the cusp of having my career really take off. And what if they're right? What if I am throwing it all away? And looking back on that now, I wish that I would have celebrated on day one that I had made the right choice for me. Sometimes I think that we celebrate the wrong things. We celebrate fast growth. We celebrate the end results when we need to celebrate day one, the day we say, I need to make a change. And so it was over the next decade or more that I got more and more hurried. It's like the change of address really didn't change anything. Yeah. And it wasn't just about how busy I was. It was about the way I felt about my life. I felt like I was constantly behind and that I wasn't doing enough. And I looked at my progress as a mom and in my faith and in my marriage and my writing career. And all of that added up to make me feel like you should be further along by now, Jennifer. And it caught up with me in a very physical way. Ended up in the doctor's office. And he's like, you have like hurry sickness. You have this thing that is an actual trauma on your body and you're stressed out. And I'm like, I'm not stressed out. I know stressed out people and I'm not one of them. But in fact, I was. And I began to pay attention to the way that God created the land to go through seasons, because I see it happen outside the window when we're planting and growing and harvesting and going through winter. And I thought, what would it be like to adopt this sort of growing slow pace that I see happening outside the window and really apply it to my own life? Because I think that God intended things to grow slowly, to put down deep roots and to pay more attention to what's going down deep into the earth than merely paying attention to upward growth that's visible to all.
Yeah. Which is so beautiful, right? Like, I love that so much of the work that he does in our heart is done beneath the soil. And I think that speaks to the upside down kingdom. Like, it speaks to the like, I'm going to grow you at home first. I'm going to grow you really, really like intentionally. And then people can see this beautiful thing that I've done. But first we have to start here. And I've talked about this song so many times on the podcast, but it's one of my very favorites, Seasons by Hillsong. So I think it's a Christmas song, but talks about from seed to sequoia. Like, a sequoia tree doesn't just like become a sequoia tree. It starts under the ground. It starts as a seed, and then it has to grow and grow and grow and grow. And those sequoia trees are years and years and hundreds of years old. And so there's this unhurrying mindset that we all need to have. So how do we start? Do we start by celebrating day one, but then what?
So we have to take first an inventory of whether we ourselves have a hurried heart. And I'm guessing that probably most of us do.
Yeah.
And so there are certain symptoms and some things that I just want to pitch out as possibilities. So we have to get honest with ourselves. Like, one of the signs of a hurried heart is that you feel like you're working harder than ever, but you can't ever get ahead.
Yeah.
Or periods of slowness will make you feel uneasy, like you should be doing something more productive. You check your phone immediately upon waking up and it just keeps going that way.
Yeah.
And studies show that the most stressed out people, the most anxious people, are the people who are constantly opening up their apps to check to see if they've got another text, another email, to see what everybody else is doing on social media. If you get frustrated in traffic or in long lines at the grocery store and you're kind of looking over thinking, oh, that line's shorter, I think I'm gonna hop over there real quick. And then while you're in that line, you're checking your phone. If you think that if a person is bored, they're probably lazy. You pride yourself on your ability to multitask. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but I think probably most people listening, and me even now, I have to fight against the urges of all those kinds of symptoms.
Yeah.
What happens is when our feet hit the ground in the morning, we immediately start to process and think through not just what we have to get done for the day, but what's at stake, like how far behind we are, just in not only with our calendars, but just philosophically.
Yeah.
And so it shoots up cortisol levels, it shoots up adrenaline levels, and we're constantly in fight or flight mode.
Yeah.
And we become adrenaline junkies. And we're not made to go like that all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And so the answer is you have to dial back. And it's not as simply as me just saying, you know, you really need to slow down, because we all know that.
Right.
But
right.
It really does require an entire philosophical mindset shift.
Yeah, it does. And I think because we have a daughter who's adopted from Africa and has seen trauma, and like we've walked through all of that with her, we understand that fight or flight. We always do this like hand motion where like your brain flips up when you're in fight or flight mode, and then that brain stem gets exposed for a certain amount of time, and that's kind of where a lot of our trauma sits. And it's really, really interesting. Our brains and bodies are just so complexly made and so wonderful, but it is frightening when we live in fight or flight so often, and our brain's so used to popping open and being in fight or flight. We are using all that cortisol, and that's where we're seeing a lot of fatigue, adrenal fatigue. And we're wondering why we're all walking around as zombies, right? Like, we're shocked when we are four-stressed. I just recently had oral surgery, and it was like four-stressed, and I was like devastated about it. But my husband was like, hey, this is part of healing. This is a part of resting our body and taking it. And I was like, you're right. And it was just constantly just like reframing that frustration to gratitude that I was able, that like I could not work for a little bit. I could, you know, that I was able just to like sit and binge watch Virgin River on Netflix. Like, what a blessing that I could just chill. But it's hard when we live in a constant state of hurry to not feel like we're falling behind. And like you said, with COVID, some of us feel like we've lost a whole year of our career or our lives or all these good, perfect plans that the Lord has for us. But how could we miss what the Lord has for us?
Right. So we can. And, you know, the interesting thing about COVID is that it really was enforced slowness.
Yeah.
Growing slow was sort of forced upon us. And, you know, I think that a lot of us have wondered at some point in our life, what would it be like if, you know, didn't have anything to worry about or anything to deal with, or not worry about, because there was plenty to worry about.
Right.
But
right.
I think that the thing was with the pandemic, even when our calendars were whited out, we still had hurried hearts because of this sense of what are we missing? And I think we were given a really up-close look at what our coping mechanisms were.
Oh, yes. And
that's what happens when you are not on the treadmill anymore. Mm-hmm. And that can actually be a really good thing, a very uncomfortable thing, but a really good thing to see, what are the things that I cope with? And it exposed that. What are the things we secretly worship? And all of those things are the things that keep us from adopting a growing slow mindset for the rest of our lives. And so for me, as an Enneagram 3, the coping mechanisms are productivity and busyness, security and achievement, and metrics-based growth that has hurried so many of our hearts in this culture for so many years.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree. For me, I'm an Enneagram 9, so we're kind of like, we're in that same triad. So for me, I was realizing my coping mechanisms was reading the news. Mm-hmm. And that was terrible. That was so, yeah. So bad because there's nothing like that input, like just continual input. And finally realizing like I have to have like no input. Like I have to take a step back. I can't continue to feed this scary beast. Otherwise, I'm just going to be terrible or scared myself all the time. That was a coping mechanism for me, but also then like trying to find healthy ways to cope and healthy things to fill that content void with or anything like that. So it's so interesting that it was very much this season of learning ourselves, learning what our schedules could look like going forward. For us, it was a big, for many of my friends, it was a big time to check our schedules. What were we filling our lives with? What really mattered? And I think that is kind of the same thing as unhurrying. Like when we strip our schedules and we say, what really matters? What are the things I have to rush to and to seek and to find? And then I love to ask myself the question, what's going to matter in 5 years? Like what's going to matter in 5 years? Or does what I'm walking through right now, does this have weight that will matter in 5 years? Because if it doesn't, I need to probably shed it off and let it go. Mm-hmm. But there's also that kind of balance of like, I need to shed it off and let it go, but also validating the small things and the good things that are already growing. And so like our family time is really important to us, like fostering those times at home and in that time just to be still was really nice. So how can we foster those things? How can we invest in those things? So I would just love to like, let's talk a little bit about like validating those small and good things that are already growing.
Absolutely. So I think that when we get into a metrics-based idea of what good growth is, we look at the end result and how high, how far, how much, and we measure it by things like, you know, I should have a house with this many square footage by now, or I should have a spouse by now, I should have this many kids by now, I should have a lake house by now, whatever it is. And, or if you're an author, I should have this many followers by now.
Right.
And so if it's all metrics based, you can never really feel any kind of satisfaction with what you're growing. And it's okay to care about your Instagram followers. And it's okay to decide, you know, I think we'd like to have a bigger house to fit our needs as a family. None of those things are wrong. But when we fixate on what's next, we can never really appreciate and validate the good things that are already growing right now. And I think so many women, so many men need permission to look upon the fields and see what they're growing and see that the good things are growing here. You know, like now that I've got kids that are older, I see in reverse how all those little things mattered.
Yeah.
How I was growing good things all along. Like every time I was down in the bedroom with Anna rubbing her back when she was sick, that mattered. Every ridiculous text string that we had, it mattered. Late night harmonizing sessions around the piano, it mattered. All of those little things add up to become a life. And so if we don't parcel it out and enjoy these moments and see those as being little tiny shoots of growth in the fields that are our lives, in the soil of our heart, then we miss what God has given us right here. I think that was another gift of COVID because we did all those things a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, we taught our grandmas how to do Zoom calls. We learned how to knit. I mean, we all bought puzzles and sat around and had game nights, and we lit the candles on the table, and we lingered longer than we ever had around the table. And we got super creative about how to love our neighbors well. Because we knew that there were lonely people that were hurting. We knew that great Aunt Barb could not get toilet paper. We knew that a 13-year-old girl was having a birthday party, but nobody was going to be able to come over. And so we get in our cars and take our trumpets and our music and our yelling and our crazy costumes, and we go tell her happy birthday as a community. Like, we got super creative, and I don't want to lose that. Those are all the little things that add up to make a life.
That's right. And while you're saying that, like, I see, like, you're talking about the little sprouts and little sprouts. What we're doing is we're fostering a field, right? Like, our life isn't just one giant plant, and that's the one thing that we should be focusing on. No, our life is made of this little field, and that is going to be our legacy. And if we're putting all of our focus in on that career sprout, or that dream sprout, or that kid sprout, or if we're just focusing in on one thing, then one is going to be really healthy while the others are super withered.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I used obviously a lot of field analogy in the book, because it's built around a metaphor of growth that I watch when we plant crops here on the farm. And I think that when I started to write the book, I thought a lot about the seeds that we're planting in the fields of our lives and wanting to see the growth that comes. But then I came across 1 Corinthians 3:9, and here it says, you are God's field. And so that's important, those seeds that we're planting. And absolutely, we're called to plant and water and fertilize those seeds, all of those sorts of things. But if we could begin also to see ourselves as fields being planted by God, and that He is growing good things in us, not just through us, good things in us, like kindness and generosity and faithfulness and all of the, all of those things and those qualities, those fruits of the Spirit that can only grow in a field that God made.
I love that so much. I love to ask authors when they come on to talk about their books about the keyboard counseling that happens over our keyboard while we write. So we live the book first, then we write the book, and then God counsels us over it. So what was a keyboard counseling moment that you took away from Growing Slowly?
Yeah. So certainly You Are God's Field was one of them, because I went in thinking it was all about Growing Slowly, the things that I'm supposed to be doing. But then I was done with the manuscript. I kind of just got done with winter. I'm like, I don't want to do too much with winter because I hate winter. I don't like real winter. And I mean, who wants to deal with the winter season of the soul? So I basically gave myself permission just not to do much with winter. I sent off the manuscript with a note saying, hey, look, I know winter's a little bit short, but I think we got enough there. If you agree with me, good deal. Let's just get this thing out. So of course, the editor comes back and says, I think that we need more in winter. So I ended up writing a chapter. It was the last chapter I wrote. It wasn't the last chapter in the book, but it's a chapter on healing that's in the book. It's called, let's see, The Slow Work of God.
The Slow Healing Work of God.
Yeah. I could not think of the word.
Chapter 17.
Chapter 17. There we go. The Slow Healing Work of God. So that was the last chapter I wrote. It is probably my favorite chapter and the one where I was keyboard counseled the most. Because the thing about it that I had forgotten, I don't know how, but out here in Iowa, some of our fields can get kind of rocky, and you have to go out in the spring and remove the rocks, and you have to cover a lot of ground. My first job as a kid was picking rock. And that's funny to say picking rock, because there's more than one. So you would walk literally miles and pick rock, because if you didn't do it come spring, it would hurt the equipment. Like, you could break something when you're planting crops or harvesting. So we had to get all that crap out of there. And so then the next spring, there'd be new rocks. And it wasn't because there was some rock fairy dropping rocks onto the fields to harass farmers. The reason is because winter heals the land. Winter, through the frost-thaw cycle, heaves stones upward. So last year, Scott sent me a picture from some of our land out by the river. He's like, Jennifer, you got to see this. It was a rock, I kid you not, the size of a living room recliner.
Whoa.
He had to spend 45 minutes digging it out with a skid loader. It had just appeared, you know, maybe like a foot of it or something had appeared at the top, and he kind of put his hand around it, trying to dig it out. And it became pretty clear pretty quickly that he's going to need something bigger to get that rock out. But it's been there always. It's been under the ground always. But the frost thaw cycle heaves it up. And when I began to apply that to my own life, and I realized that my soul needs winter too. It needs seasons of slowing down and letting God do work of picking rock in me. And those rocks are all of the burdens I carry. They're all of the coping mechanisms that I lean on. They're all the insecurities that I have. And some of those things maybe are like huge living room recliner sized burdens that you've been carrying around for a really long time. They got to go. And we got to let God pick them and throw them at the foot of the cross. But they might even be a small pebble. But you and I both know that we get, when we get a pebble in our sneaker or our tennis shoes, that it can be super irritating. And so just like you got to pick rock out of field so you don't hurt the equipment come planting, we need to do the same and let God use winter to get this stuff out of our lives so that we can grow beautiful things.
Well, I'm glad you learned that in keyword counseling, because I don't want to learn that in keyword counseling and I just needed it right now. That's so, so beautifully said. And I didn't know that about, like, I mean, I know frost heaves. I was raised around frost heaves. Like, I understand that, but I didn't realize, I mean, like, when you think about that, like, when I think about this last winter of my own heart and my own life, walking through the winter, an actual winter, which is devastating and dark, and seeing God pick rock through that winter season and expose the rock in that winter season is awful. But then comes spring, right? And we see this like glorious, like, okay, I see what you were doing. And it really sucked. It was really, really hard. But like, okay, there's going to be fruit on this other side. And he's just that reminder of like, just remain here. Just stick with me. I got you. But like, we're going to do some hard work, and it's pick and rock, and it's not fun.
Yeah, for sure. So I have a Bible study that goes with Growing Slow. It releases the same day. And we have videos that help you see all of these seasons. And we even have like video of that ginormous rock.
I love that.
And what we did, Scott and I created a wall in one of the barns, and we painted it black, and people are sending me their burdens on a little stone illustrations that's inside of week six of the Bible study. And they're writing on there what their burden is, what that rock is. And we're getting them at PO Box 327 in Wood, Iowa. Got my own post office box for the rocks, a box for rocks. And then I take them to the barn and I staple them to the wall and paint them over and I pray over them. And it kind of just can seem like a small thing to send a paper rock to some random farm wife in Iowa. But I'm telling you, there is power in naming these things, and there is power in saying, will you pray for me about this thing? And so I'm hoping that there will be a movement of people allowing God to pick rock, and I want to put those rocks on my wall and pray over them.
I love that. And I know that your heart for friendship is so much like mine, in the sense of like, we can't carry these burdens alone. Like, we weren't called to carry these burdens alone. One of my favorite Bible stories is Moses watching his people fight in the valley. And then Joshua and his two friends. I wrote a devotional about it. I'm like, his bros came up and like held his arms up.
Aaron and her.
That's right. Because Joshua was leading the battle in the valley.
We got it. Look at us go.
Yeah, Bible girls. There you go. And so, but it's like, we can't fight our battles alone. And when we confess something like that, like, hey, this is a burden I'm carrying, even to a stranger in Iowa, to a sweet farm wife in Iowa, like, it matters. And that matters. Ugh, I just love that so much. Because we believe in seasons here, it's time for coffee. Because right now it's time for coffee. What season is it in your life right now? What is it time for in your life?
Well, it's literal spring outside. And I feel a spring in my heart as well, because I have been in a long winter. I think we've been in like a long winter with the pandemic. And it was good. I mean, it was healing for me. And I'm taking a lot of lessons out of that. But I have begun to experience a spring season. And I felt it the other day when I watched Scott out cultivating the fields. And when he does that, he drags this gigantic like rake kind of a thing that turns over the land. And when I was walking out to go see him, I was on the hard ground, and then all of a sudden, boom, I hit a spot where he had tilled the land, and it was so soft, my feet sunk down in. And I want to have a soft heart like that. Mm. Farmers cultivate fields. God cultivates hearts, and I want to let him cover every inch of my heart, and I want to go into this spring season with a heart that is soft and open and tender to what he has for me.
Mm. Amen. That's what I want too. I love that. Okay. Your book is going to be available everywhere, I'm guessing. It's not just on one website, I'm hoping.
That's right.
Otherwise, your publishers did you dirty. That's right. Where's the best way for us to buy your book? Where can we follow along? Where can we get the Bible study? And is there ways to do that like in a group? Give us all the deets.
Absolutely. So if you go to growingslowbook.com, there will be a bunch of retailers listed there. And the book releases the same day as the Bible study. And my Bible studies are very often taken in large groups, in small groups, and individually. And so that's a separate workbook. Yeah. And the cool thing is, if you pre-order the book right now, you actually get the videos for free.
Oh, that's
And so
great.
Over the course of a year, a videographer came out here, and we have spring, summer, autumn and winter footage, and weave lessons through all of those. It's super cinematic, really neat videos. And we're also giving away a guided journal and growth tracker. Ooh. It helps you look at your growth over, you know, month by month, what's languishing, what's flourishing. And that's a printable journal, that's available right now as well. And so you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Jennifer Dukesley is the best place to find me. And I would love to connect with you all.
Awesome. I love this. Thank you so much. Thank you for pouring your heart into these seasons, into reminding us that we need deep roots or ruts. And that is, I mean, like to me, that has been my lesson this past year to 2 years is like deep roots really matter.
That's right.
And I appreciate you just pouring your heart out like this.
It's been my joy. Thanks for having me.
We tend to assume we're okay until we're not. But just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you're healthy, especially in this season when everything has been turned upside down and inside out. Getting healthy is an ongoing process that requires you to stop, dig deep, and ask yourself some hard questions. I'm Deborah Falada. I'm an author and licensed professional counselor, and I'm also part of the Converge Podcast Network. In my new book, Are You Really Okay? I'm going to challenge you to get real about who you are and how you're doing spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and physically. I want to help you get to the root of what you believe about yourself, others, and God, and then establish healthy habits, stronger communication, and wholehearted healing. Using a combination of science, psychology, and faith, Are You Really Okay? Will help you get healthy from the inside out. And for a limited time, you'll also receive the free audiobook and an exclusive free journal with every pre-order. Order from your favorite retailer today and visit areyoureallyokay.com to learn more. That's areyoureallyokay.com.
I want to encourage you today to check your heart. Do you have a hurried heart? Are you wrestling with discontentment? Are you like me and realizing that you open your phone to Instagram without even noticing it because it's better than being bored or sitting in quiet? Let's start slowing down. Grab Jennifer's new book today. I know that you'll love it. To make it super simple for you, I put it in my Instagram links under book recommendations. It'll take you straight to my Amazon storefront where I have all of my favorite books linked, from past guests to upcoming guests to fiction and nonfiction books I've loved. All book recommendations live there. And I'll see you next week when it's time for coffee.
Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.